And now it is my fantastic pleasure to invite our Joni to come in on in and share with us today.
I said good morning and thank you. I love being a fantastic pleasure. With qualifying, the basic pattern I'm familiar with is to share what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And part A, what I was like. I've heard a lot of speakers share about very traumatic and painful childhoods. And I don't have that in my past, objectively, if an outsider were to look at my family life, although everybody's family is closeted, really. Nobody knows what goes on behind closed doors. But I was raised in an average dysfunctional Catholic family. I'm number three of five children, and always felt a little lost and unseen. My brother and sister were treated as twins because they were born so close together. Then it was myself, then it was my brother Paul, who had a physical birth defect, so he was given special attention. And Joey was the caboose. He came 13 years later, 13 years behind me. But I was the chubby person in the family. And very self-conscious about that. My sisters and brothers were very athletic. I was not. I wrote poetry as an 8-year-old, but was not proud of that. I hid in the bathroom when my father brought my little poetry book I had written for him and my mother to my grandmother's house. I was almost ashamed of, I don't know, I was ashamed. I don't know why, because it was a pretty good. Was a pretty good book of poetry. It is not in print to this day. I don't know where my copies were, but I did write a little 8-page book of verse. I first started dieting or doing something about my weight when I was in 7th grade. And I used a calorie counter in the back of my mother's Better Homes and Gardens cookbook. It was only a page long, you know, with various food groups. And I knew that 500 calories deficit a week would mean a pound loss. And that's what I shot for. But I ended up eating about 700 calories a day. I blacked out one day in school, got down to about 85 pounds. I weighed about 120 in 7th grade, which is a lot for a little girl. So I felt beautiful at 85 pounds. My parents were terribly worried about me, brought me to a doctor. He gave me a list of an average weight gain over a period of time for a growing adolescent. I started to bring a dessert back into my food plan when I was in a freshman in high school, and that's when I started gaining my weight back. I couldn't handle desserts. So by the end of freshman year, I was 115 pounds. By junior year, I was close to probably 180, and looking for a desk that I could sit in. We had the chairs connected to the desk, the old-fashioned school desk with the swivel chairs. And I'd get to class early to see what seat I could slide into. From that first period of starving myself to the weight gain, I discovered a commercial weight loss program. And I was not successful my first go around. In fact, my mother, who was very understanding, took me aside and said, Joni, if you're not going to stick to this plan, I can't cook these special meals. I just, you know, it's frustrating and it's exhausting. And I dropped out. I dropped out of that program only to join it again when I was 18 and I was very successful. I got down to quote unquote goal weight, but I couldn't stay there. I couldn't stay there. So within 3 years, I was back to about 150 pounds. But once you weigh 88 pounds, anything is too much. So I had my first, I found out about OA. I found out about OA in that commercial weight loss meeting. A friend of my aunt, who was a sister of St. Joseph, Sister Sally, sat next to me at this weight loss program and said, "I've had enough of weighing every week. I'm going back to Overeaters Anonymous." It was the only place I felt I lost weight. So that information was in the back of my head. And probably, oh, I was about 22. When I was 32, 10 years later, I picked up the phone on a Saturday morning at 7 o'clock, called the OA hotline, not expecting anything but a tape and a person answered. It was the operator for the line. She was not a member of the organization, but it was so surprising to get a person that it just was surprising to get a person. The meeting in my area was within walking distance. So I went that Monday to a Salvation Army office, which was a couple blocks from my home. And I sat in on my first OA meeting in 1985 of September. And we had, it was a 2-hour meeting. We had a qualifier at every meeting. But what was eye-opening to me was that it was a spiritual, emotional, and physical program. And I was hooked. That holistic approach drew me in. And I have never left. I've never left the rooms. Have I worked a good program these past years? No, but I've never left. And that's what's kept me sane and out of the psych ward. I've been in the psych ward. We used to call it the slammer. The people that are there. And I've been hospitalized for manic depressive illness 3 times in my life. The last time was like, oh, 40 years ago. So it's in my distant past. But in program, I found my first sponsor. I called Norma Monday through Friday at 8:30 for about 15 years. Norma left the program when OA started moving in with their literature. She liked the OA literature and for whatever reason, thought the program was being watered down. So she left the rooms, but she always said, "You can take the girl out of OA, but you can't take the OA out of the girl." So she remained a very close friend, and I knew her up until the day she died. What happened to me, and I think I've kind of gotten into that already, is I did lose weight. I got a sponsor. I did lose about 30, 35 pounds because I was moving down from 150. I called a sponsor every day. I realized the program was the best tool I had for sanity. Working the 12 steps brought me out of a mindset of fear. I was very, very fearful. In fact, in my big book, wherever the word resentful was written, I replaced it with fear because that was the underpinning of my life. I've always been very, very afraid. It's not of anything in specifically. It's just my operating system. I heard someone in these rooms call it operating system. But my biggest fear, my biggest general fear was what people thought. And I was so imprisoned by the mind, what was going on in everybody else's mind, that I couldn't make decisions of my own. And I let everybody else make decisions for me. And a couple of times deferring to someone's decision that was quote unquote the decision of the hour or a family member who was the person that was noted to have the most sane way or practical way of thinking. when I de and with my sister, when I deferred to my sister's advice on two very important occasions, it was not good advice for me. And on other occasions, I would defer to less important decisions, but they were never right for me. Never right for me. But I was too afraid to live out my own decisions. And that remained for several years, even after program. It took a long time for me to become aware that what happened in other people's minds. First of all, I was not in their mind. I was not the most important thing in their mind. In fact, I was rarely in anybody else's mind but my own. But my identity was so caught up in what I thought people thought of me. It was a real mind mess. And it's been very, very recently when I've just gotten tired of it, and I decided that my decisions are my decisions. This is not nuclear war here. I'm not pushing any buttons that are going to decimate the world. They're very minor decisions that affect me and how I relate to the world. So I've become more and more comfortable about asserting my position. And that's been wonderful for me. I found out my relationships are vastly improved when I feel comfortable registering that, no, I don't think I want to do that. No, I don't agree with that. No, this is what I want. And most recently in my home life, I was at a deadlock with my husband over something that he was being very unreasonable about, but he's very, very forceful about his obsessions. And this one was just something that didn't make sense to me. I wanted something a certain way. And when we were at a deadlock, when it became apparent nobody was going to make a decision because we each wanted our own way, I made my decision. I took my answer. He came home. The situation was changed. And boy, was he surprised. He wasn't angry. He was just surprised. So that was eye-opening to me. And it was just, when I give in to what everybody else wants, I started to really be resentful in relationships, quietly resentful, but resentful, always being the one to to own my part, but owning my part, I would own your part too, or the other person's part. And sometimes, to be frank, I don't have a big part. And I don't want to own anybody else's because it gives them permission to blame me or to think it's my fault. And I'm done with that. I'm really done with that. And basically, that's all I want to share is that I'm not afraid of what people think as much. I'm not afraid to tell you what I need or what I want or what I can do or what I can't do. Not all the time, but more frequently. And I wouldn't have evolved into this mindset without the 12 steps and without working the program. I don't work it perfectly, but I do believe each leg of the stool, the physical part, the spiritual part, and the emotional part are vitally important. Stool can't stand up on two legs. Making one part more important than the other doesn't work. Saying that one part doesn't matter doesn't work. They're all important. They all need to be worked together. And if I keep coming back, or because I've kept coming back, I'm working a better program continually every day, or better every day. It gets better. I believe recovery is progressive. Falling down does not mean failure. Getting up and keep coming back, that's what's helped me. So thank you very much. I don't know how much time I've used, P.T. Barnum has always said, leave them wanting more. And I've always liked that. So thank you and God bless.